This is Lori Sonkin with WRFI Community Radio News. My guest this evening joining us by telephone from Washington, D.C. is John Lawrence. John was the chief of staff to Nancy Pelosi, both when she was Speaker of the House of Representatives and the Democratic leader. Until his retirement in 2013, he was the longest-serving staff member in the House of Representatives. Welcome to the program, John Lawrence.
Thank you very much, Lori. It's nice to be with you again.
It's nice to be with you. Thanks for joining us. So we are only 12 days into Trump's presidency, and people are asking what they can do to stop President Trump and the Republican Congress from destroying the country. I thought your perspective on the subject would be interesting since you have been on the receiving end of constituents' demands. To begin, John, so what are some effective ways that citizens can keep the president from dismantling programs, policies, and laws?
You know, I think that there is an important point to be made here that too many people are under the impression that it's impossible to influence elected officials. For a variety of reasons, there's a general presumption that it's only people who are who have money, only people who have supported campaigns or are in powerful positions. And that's really not true. There's an old saying that the people who say you can't fight City Hall are the people who are in City Hall to discourage people. I think that the kinds of public demonstrations that have occurred since the inauguration, which have been widespread, have been peaceful, have showed a very broad coalition, are important not only to send a message to the Trump administration, but also to send a message to sympathetic legislators and others that the public is paying attention, is engaged, is not disenchanted. I think those need to continue as the president and his administration roll out either executive orders or tonight a Supreme Court nominee or a specific policy options on the Affordable Care Act or on others. So I think that's important. I think that people should certainly think in terms of contributing their time and their money if they are able to some key organizations. I'd be cautious to know exactly who is soliciting money so that you're not supporting either duplicative or fly-by-night operations that are set up to try to make money off these activities, but certainly people have been giving to groups like Planned Parenthood, which is at great risk, I think, of losing significant amounts of public dollars, to the ACLU, which played a very key role in jumping in and providing legal assistance to immigrants and refugees over the last weekend. And I also think that it's important to encourage sympathetic office holders to take actions that they can take in terms of supporting legislation. In some cases, there are office holders who are attorneys general who can file lawsuits against, in the states, who can file lawsuits against proposals by the administration. As I understand, the attorney general in Washington state under Governor Inslee is prepared to do. The most important thing is to not be discouraged and not to be disheartened. Inaction, simply getting angry, dropping out, that is the best kind of news for the Trump administration. Everyone who is opposed to their activities, who decides not to become engaged because they're discouraged or because too many of our own policies or programs seem to be undersold, that's good news for the Trump administration. So you have to overcome that sense of disenchantment and not fall prey to the notion that the system is broken and the system is unresponsive, because it is only through citizen engagement that they will feel the pressure, and supporters will feel encouraged to take up and sustain action against these kinds of activities.
John, does it make sense for people to send emails and call congressional offices? I mean, do members of Congress care?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that not only was I on the receiving end of those kinds of calls for almost 40 years, but I now teach and I have students who are interns, they are all in those congressional offices logging in the phone calls. That really encourages people. Even if you're calling the members who are supportive of the positions that you take, that encourages them, that boosts them up. It is extremely discouraging if you're not hearing from your supporters. In those people who live in congressional districts or where they have representatives, or in states where they have senators who are not providing the kind of pushback, the kind of resistance, don't hesitate to contact them as well. Members of Congress pay a lot of attention to the messages that they get from their district. There are a lot of Republicans who might be inclined to be supportive of the Trump administration, who won their seats by very narrow margins. They know that a change of 3 or 4 votes per precinct can change the outcome of election, and they are not going to treat cavalierly uprisings within their own districts. The other thing is that they will get a message that those people who disapprove of these policies are organized and are energized, and they're going to have to pay attention.
Does it make any sense to email or call members of Congress in leadership positions, such as a chairman of a committee, when the person calling is not in the chairman's congressional district?
Well, you're going to have more impact in your own congressional district. I think you have to be. We have to be honest about that. The issue here is not so much informing the members of your opinion. It is putting them on notice that you're prepared to take political action to their detriment, and you can't really do that particularly effectively. I don't think there's any downside to contacting a chairman with whom you might disagree, but I would not recommend doing that to the exclusion of contacting your own representatives. There's nothing like getting a phone call or an email or a letter from your congressional district.
And letters.
That's why when you go ahead.
I was going to say, do letters still make sense? I mean,
absolutely. Anything, any type of communication makes sense. The only problem with letters is that if there's any kind of a time deadline, there are security procedures that any incoming mail goes through that can delay the letter. So I would suggest that either a phone call or an email is probably the faster and more effective way of influencing a member of Congress or a senator.
What about signing petitions? Is that helpful? Not as effective as it. Well, go on.
Yeah, I think petitions are less effective because there's a calculation that is made that a lot of these people do not know what they're actually signing, that they're just somebody's just waiting outside a CVS or outside a Safeway and vacuuming up signatures. It's not as effective as getting an individual letter or an individual email. And look, an email, it doesn't cost anything. It takes a second to do. Everybody's name is on the internet, and you can easily find their email addresses. I really would recommend, even if you're utilizing a message, the body of which has been developed by an advocacy organization, that's a more effective way to communicate than a petition.
And what about visiting congressional offices, either in Washington or in district offices, and perhaps what about protests outside congressional district offices?
Well, you know, I think that having that district angle is crucial. I very often will talk with groups that want to know about bringing constituents or bringing members of their organizations to Washington to meet with their members of Congress. And what I very often will advise them is do it in your district. It's much easier to find the member in the district, particularly a House member. You can go on the Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy's webpage, and you can see exactly when the Congress is in their district work periods, their recesses, and generally House members are back in their district for at least part of that recess. because they're always concerned about what's happening. They always have their ear to the ground, or they're touching the hot stove, as Nancy Pelosi used to say. And asking, seeing that that member's going to be there in 2 weeks and calling up and saying, I've got a group of people here, and we want to talk to you about the Affordable Care Act. We're doctors, we're hospital administrators, we're patient advocates, we're parents of kids with pre-existing conditions. We want to have a meeting with you. We don't want to meet with your staff assistant. We don't want to meet with your casework person. We want to meet with you, and we know you're going to be in the district. So I think that's a more effective than coming to D.C. with all the time and expense that's involved. You can, and then maybe meeting with a young legislative assistant or an intern. You can bring a much larger group of people. And what's more, you can have your meeting, and then you can do a press event outside that office, or you can put out a press release, or you can call a local reporter and say, look, we just met with Congresswoman so-and-so or Congressman so-and-so, and we're a representative group, and what we told them is we're watching how they vote on, you know, whatever your issue is, and we made it very clear that this has impact in this district with these voters. And we're not talking here about some international issue that is tangential to the interests of the people who vote in this district. We're talking about something that impacts us right here in this district, whether it's immigration policy or whether it's schools or whether it's health care or whatever the issue is. So I would say that it's important to do meetings. I would say it's important to do meetings locally, but I would also have a little bit of a press strategy. Do a meeting and do a press conference afterwards, or do a press release, or arrange to meet with a local political reporter so you can follow up on the meeting. Now, if the local official says they can't meet with you, I would put a picket line around their district office and say, Congressman so-and-so refuses to meet with constituents to discuss this issue, and call the press and have them come. I bet you that the member of Congress will meet with you.
Speaking of picket lines, one senator who's been hearing from his constituents is Senator Chuck Schumer, the Democratic leader in the Senate. Apparently, there are lots of people that are upset that he voted to confirm Mike Pompeo as the director of the CIA, James Mattis as Secretary of Defense, and Mike Flynn as National Security Advisor. Do you think those protests outside Schumer's office are helpful? And why do you think he voted to confirm them?
Well, I don't think they're particularly helpful right now in terms of influencing him. My guess is, and I mean, I hate to speak for members of Congress. I found it generally a dangerous thing to do, even if they happen to be the ones I've worked for. My guess is that in the case of some of these appointees, that the members of Congress are of the opinion that the president has the right to appoint someone who is shares their point of view, and that the test ought to be, are they competent to do that job, more than do I agree with them or not, because they are going to reflect the viewpoint of the president. The president's not going to appoint someone he disagrees with to positions of that sort. Now, I think when you get into some of the other positions, the Secretary of Education, the proposed Secretary of Education, the proposed Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, the proposed Secretary of Labor, in those cases, there is genuine concern that they are not qualified. I don't think that there was an issue here that General Mattis or that Mr. Congressman Pompeo were not qualified. I think the issue that was the disagreement with their positions. But some of these other nominees seem to have distinguished themselves mainly by opposing the mission and the statutory requirements of the agencies that they've been nominated to lead. I think that's a very different matter, and I would suspect that you'll see more negative votes on those positions than on the ones that you mentioned.
John, we are just about out of time, but I have one last question. Do you think that Trump will last 4 years?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I think you have to work on the expectation that he will. I certainly have heard all the expectations. He'll get frustrated. He'll leave us for a younger country, all those predictions. But I think the guess is, if I had to guess, I would say he will stick this out, although I wouldn't necessarily bet that he would run for a second term. And that's not so much wishful thinking as I think we've seen in President Trump a willingness to do something, however half-heartedly or however half-successfully, call it victory and move on to do something else. You know, in 4 years, he'll be almost 75 years old. My guess is he might be thinking of other things he'd like to do for that portion of his life where he's going to be healthy and he's going to be able to do things with his family. And he may be tiring of what will be, I think, a very, very combative and a confrontational four-year period. But I wouldn't expect to see him make an early exit.
Okay. Well, John Lawrence, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight. It's been a great
pleasure. It's nice talking with you again.
Thanks, John. John Lawrence is the former chief of staff to Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House of Representatives.